Welcome to the Classical Happy Hour. I'm your host, Martin Davids. This is the show where my guests and I talk about music while enjoying a tasty beverage, then we try to play some music together. Today's guest is Jan Maxson. So, it's great to see you, Jan.
Good to see you too, Marty.
It's been a while.
Yes, it has.
So tell me a little bit about like your first musical experiences. Do you come from a musical family or...
Yes, I do come from a musical family. My parents, although they're not professional musicians per se, my dad does not have a degree in music. However, being a physician, music was pretty much his passion, and his whole life was rotating around music. So he would do his job at the clinic during the day, and then he'd come back, take a nap, and go play for a wedding. And he probably did like 5 nights a week. Those weddings, and whenever he was at home, he was either rehearsing with his band or doing music with me together. There was constantly, at all times, there was either live music being played by my parents, or we were listening to some pretty quality music of all genres. From what I recall, my parents used to listen to classical, jazz, pop from different parts of the world, different languages, and even folk music from different parts of the world. That's sort of also.
So, what did your dad play?
Played guitar. He played pretty much anything that could be played. But his main thing was guitar. Yeah, that's what he played in his band. But he played piano quite decently.
So, what kind of band was it?
It was like a wedding band. They had drums, bass, my dad playing guitar, and he was singing, obviously, like male singer, and they had a female vocalist as well. So that was their four piece band.
So was it like pop music or jazz?
Everything. They played. It was back in Russia, and so they played every single Russian title from beginning of time until the modern pop of those days. They played some American jazz. They played some Western rock and pop music, like from the Beatles to whatever the pop music. I remember from pop music of those days, it was like things like Chris Norman, like some names that would probably be obscure here in the USA. Creedence Clearwater Revival. Wow. They did things like that. So and on top of that, he sang in every single possible language without knowing a single word in it. So he used transliteration. Basically, they would jot down the way they heard it from the record. And it was pretty random. Like if I were to pick up those English transliterations, that would not make much sense to an English speaker. But that's sort of what they went by. And I kind of got my passion for languages and for singing in other languages from my dad. But I kind of took it a step up. I actually kind of learn some of the languages that I sing in, and if I don't fully learn the language, I at least learn like the proper phonetics, and I memorize all the words with the meanings of all the words. So kind of like while you sing, you actually become the carrier of the language for the time being. So.
Yeah, I mean, you hear choirs all the time singing different languages.
Yeah, opera
and they
choirs,
probably have no idea.
Yeah.
What they're
well,
singing.
No idea. That that's probably not that great. Like I try to, when I memorize every single word with the meaning of that word. So I actually kind of feel and live through every word that I sing in whatever language that may be. But I know actors do it. There's actors that do, you know, plays and movies in foreign languages, and you know, they memorize the words and the meanings that come with them in order to be able to really live through that role.
Well, you hear like some K-pop in English and you wonder if they have any idea what the words mean. It's just like a string of
right,
words that
right.
sound kind of like a sentence.
Yeah.
Well, so you believe in the meaning behind the lyrics of a song and not just trying to have a nice sound in your voice?
Yes and no. Interestingly enough, here's the backside of the same story of me being back home in Russia before I learned any English. Obviously, I listened to a lot of English and American music and French music, other music and languages that I did not speak at the time. And then, you know, the music was obviously, I felt the music, and the music, a lot of American music was really resonating without knowing the lyrics. And then when I did learn English and began to understand what those songs meant, some of it was, to say the least, disappointing. Like, you would expect some really incredibly beautiful songs to have some super profound, you know, philosophical, existential meanings. And here it's, you know, something, you love me, I love you, kind of deal. So, yeah, it was a little bit disappointing. And that's when I questioned myself, does it really matter whether you understand the words and to what extent? And maybe in some music it does matter a lot, and in other music it doesn't matter so much. Like in opera, for the majority of the people who do not speak Italian, they still, or French, they still, they're, you know, they get engulfed with the music, they you know, feel it very deeply without understanding every word, just you know, possibly knowing the plot, maybe not even knowing the plot, still, you know, the music having deep effect on the person listening. And so I do believe in deep effect of music in general. So whether it has words, whether it or it doesn't, or whether you understand or you don't understand. So I believe the music has as a very profound sort of qualities, even probably the most profound of all other forms of art that we have. I could attest probably that from the ancient times, it's something that genetically has been passed on to us, whether we realize it or not. We think that, okay, the written music, like, you know, we can trace it back to like Gregorian chant and some other things, but before Gregorian chant there were, you know, other forms of music for hundreds and thousands of years prior to that. That's where Gregorian chant came from, or Byzantine chant, or other forms of music that are already documented and we know exactly what they sound like. So that's what I call like the genetics of music. And I do believe that we have a lot of like common genes in music, like even in cultures that today are completely disconnected by land, by culture, by languages and other things, but there are some elements of that music that take us back really, really far back, where, you know, we're all you know, find this common ancestry through these bits of musical DNA.
For sure. I mean, anyone that's ever listened to drums or even chanted together in unison without a tone with it, but let alone like singing in unison or singing in harmony, there's some, it affects your body in a certain way. And it's not, it doesn't matter where you're from.
Right.
We all feel it.
Yeah.
And it also, it doesn't need words. Like you said, you know, just playing an instrument can affect somebody no matter what language they speak.
Absolutely.
It's the power of music is awesome. Okay, so did you want to be a musician when you grew up?
I wanted to be several things. I wanted to be a pilot, I wanted to be a doctor, and I wanted to be a musician. Those are like the three main avenues. I don't think I ever wanted to be a musician. I wanted to me, music was just like, you know, I knew my dad was a doctor, but he's entire life was rotating around music. I never really saw music as a profession. Like, I knew there were musicians that played in symphony orchestras. Like, they took me to a symphony concert and I saw musicians who played in the symphony. That's not something I ever really wanted to do or saw myself doing. So when I started classical training at the, you know, the most prestigious school in Leningrad, St. Petersburg, when I was 5 and 6, I sort of didn't quite grasp the whole concept of training to be a professional musician. And you know what? This is, I'm talking to you right now, and this is a realization that I come to for the first time in my life. Like, going back through to that time, I never thought of it. I knew there was something not quite right. And also, like, the people, the teachers in the school, they all had hard time with me, because I was kind of like in my own world. They're like, they were there to train kind of like Olympic, the counterpart of Olympic competitors. And I was just like in a completely different world. Like, I did not want to compete. I did not want to, you know, become best of the best just for the sake of like beating somebody else in a competition or in an audition. I just wanted to have fun and to enjoy making music, and that's kind of, it took it out for me. This formal training took out all the joy out of music for me for many, many years. And that's when my mind, I was flying planes. If you look at my notebooks from, you know, from grade school through high school, I drew on every page there were airplanes. So
did you ever learn how to fly a plane?
I did. I learned how to fly a plane from the very first opportunity. In Russia, you were allowed to start flying when you were 15, and that's when I started flying planes. And when I came to America, I also, interestingly, I came to America as a teenager. I finished high school, and I went to college for music. I was pursuing music. I was playing gigs. But for me, it was sort of, at that time, I thought I was going to make enough money playing gigs to pay for my flight school. And I was doing that for a while, actually. I was playing gigs and went to flight school. And then I even had I started something similar to, it was early day of the internet, very early days. It was, there was like a very basic like HTML website, university website where I was at Champaign-Urbana, actually, for grad school. I was doing aviation and music at the same time. And so I put out an ad, kind of like way before Craigslist, way before Uber, way before all those things. I put an ad and said, I'll fly you anywhere in a 500-mile radius from Champaign-Urbana. And I started getting people to, I would like fill up trips to like Des Moines, Iowa, to Chicago, Mixfield, which was open. I took routinely sometimes several trips a week to the now defunct Mixfield and many other places.
So did you have to rent an airplane, or?
That's the whole point. So I rented an airplane, and what the money I got, kind of illegally from no insurance. Obviously, I didn't have any insurance or anything. Like, hopefully, this is all behind the beyond the statute of limitations. Oh man, this is so bad. So I was flying people to their destinations, and that pretty much paid for the plane rental. That was my biggest aspiration, to have the aircraft rental covered. For me, there was a big victory if I could take a trip and not pay for it.
Plus, you logged all those hours.
Yeah, that's
right?
Exactly it. That was exactly the point. I had fun, and I was logging the hours towards my airline career.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's pretty smart.
Yeah,
the early internet. Those message boards.
I know. This is like 1996.
Was it Usenet or something?
Yeah, Telnet. Telnet was one of them. Was the earliest. Remember those Mac with like this whatever 6x6 screen, and it was black letter, white letters on black background, or on PC it was black, white on black, and on Mac it was black on white, and Telnet prompt. You log in and all those things. And that was actually not that long ago. That was like quarter century ago.
Yeah, right. Time, you know, things progress so fast now.
Yeah.
So did you turn a corner at some point and think music is it and the flying is not? Or
it was sort of it was circumstantial. It was year 2000, and I was still not 100% sure. I was on student visa back then. I sort of needed to figure out ways to stay in the States. And I had to either keep going to school, which I completely dreaded the idea of, like, doing something like a doctorate, and it was just not my thing. Or to, you know, land a symphony job that would get you apply for your work visa. So I was fortunate. I auditioned for the New World Symphony, which is kind of a unique organization. It's sort of functions as a full-time symphony orchestra. So you get a salary like a professional musician. And on top of that, you get free place to live in Miami Beach, which, you know, accounts to, you know, another, like, a pretty big chunk of whatever, not having to pay. So it was great. For me, it was kind of, I auditioned and I got in. I got a phone call from Michael Tilson Thomas, and it was like one of, at the same time, remember that whole thing, you coming to Hollywood kind of thing? I forget what the name of the show was, but it was kind of similar. For me, it was
like American Idol.
Yeah. For me, it was a moment similar to that. Yeah, I thought Miami Beach, New World Symphony, that was like the top of my dream, pretty much, what it was as far as like music was concerned. I didn't even think, I had somewhat limited self-esteem as far as my musical abilities were concerned. So for me to get into New World Symphony was a big deal. Like, I was kind of, I couldn't believe my own, you know, couldn't believe that it was actually happening to me. And that was kind of a turning point, being there, that for the first time I was being regarded as a professional musician, as a musician of certain standing, good enough to be part of New World Symphony and to receive, certain encouragement from people like Michael Tilson Thomas, who to me it was like, you know, one of the probably biggest stars of classical music. So it was a bit of a change. Like, it was the first time when I actually started believing in myself that, you know, and there were some other discoveries about music. Actually, Michael Tilson Thomas, I would say he is responsible for a lot of changes in, as far as my relationship with music, with audience was concerned. Like, I always felt disconnected from the audience being a classical musician as opposed to like rock musician, where it's like a different relationship between you and the crowd on the other side. So and classical music, it's always felt like there was a thick glass, plexiglass between the audience and the musicians in a way. And Michael MTT, I should say, he was the one who sort of taught me how to break that glass between the audience and the musicians on the other side of the stage.
So you didn't feel like that with that orchestra? That barrier?
I did not. I actually started learning how to, you know, go beyond that. And that not only with that orchestra, but with I kind of realized that I could do it myself even without. And that's the other thing that MTT told me, that you know, your goal as an artist is to go out there and look for your own voice. That was one thing that I kind of, you know, it was kind of too broad, too vague, sort of, when he first said it, and then took me a while, to probably several years, to figure out what exactly he meant by that. But I, at some point, I knew exactly what he meant by, you know, by finding your own voice in the world of music. And that's sort of been my journey when I actually quit classical music per se, Circa, I don't know, no, it was like kind of a mild transition. It started around 2008 or 2006, and I was fully making a living as a non-classical musician, not playing any classical gigs, except, okay, but like majority of my gigs were not related to classical music by 2015, I'd say. So about 10 years. Yeah. Oh, and so aviation wise, first of all, it was the first time when music, started taking over when I was with the New World Symphony, and it was also around 9/11 when the whole along with everything else, there was kind of a crisis in aviation at that time. And at that very time, that's when I was sort of at the crossroads whether to go into aviation or stick with music. I was kind of disadvised from pursuing aviation at that time, and I kind of that's how I was feeling as well. As a like a airline pilot, I was not the best time, and also there were some favorable circumstances for continuing as a musician. That's sort of that was the fate at the time, circumstances that put me where I started developing as a musician.
So, have you ever gone back to it?
I did. I think last time I had you have to have current medical and you have to have biannual review. So last time I had medical and biannual was like circa 2006. But I've occasionally fly with friends who own airplanes as a as a with somebody else who has a current status.
Co-pilot
You
kind
can
of thing.
fly co-pilot. You can fly as long as they're there on the plane. So I've done a little bit of that. Been so incredibly busy in the last few years. So I have no life. I've n nothing. It's just constantly 24 hours a day, something related to music or to marketing or to other unfortunate creative aspects of a musical career that
Well, thanks for fitting this in.
absolutely. Huh.
So, to any for any of my listeners that don't really know you, like what kind of music are you doing these days?
What kind of music? The albums that I've released, the last two albums, 2019 and 2021, this is all original music for cello, using electronics. That is, when I record that music, it's literally just recording cello one layer on top of the other. When I play it in real life, in real concerts, I use a device called a loop pedal, where you record one layer, and then on top of that you record another layer, and then on top of all of that you either play a melody or improvise, or play a melody then improvise. And on top of that, I usually have a percussionist and a drummer, or just a percussionist. So like those albums were recorded with cello, many layers of cello and percussion. And I sort of play that music live as well for all of the concerts. And I play a lot of concerts. Even through COVID, I managed to play in countries where that were not completely shut down for COVID. I managed to play nearly 100 concerts in 2020 and 2021. And now back, back on track here in North America. I just finished doing a tour, 25 concerts in 30 days in North America, Canada, and USA. So that's all original music that I write myself. It sort of includes elements of a little bit of everything, but it sort of all boils down to that musical genetics that I just told you about a little while ago. So just finding elements in Arabic music and Balkan music and Middle Eastern music in general, Spanish, Andalusian flamenco music of South America, music of Northern Africa that's also related to both American blues, jazz, and Spanish flamenco in different ways. So all of that, just finding some elements and kind of bringing them together. And it's not very, some people say it's that music is not very complex harmonically, but I do strongly believe that some of the most profound music can be born from, fairly unsophisticated harmonies. And there's a lot of means for expression and for mastery within those kind of simple progressions. That's sort of where I'm at right now. I've also released albums in the past of more sort of conventional, contemporary, modern classical, more like academic music, also for unaccompanied cello. And I also, which started as a hobby, I sing in 30 languages. I have not so far gotten to a point where I record that music. Although I do perform it live in concerts, I just haven't found a concept yet to turn it into a record, which I want to, but it's just kind of still brewing. But hopefully I will get to it at some point, because right now the concept is this instrumental music, and I that's where it's at.
So that's what you're touring now, stuff off those two albums, and are you continuing to create that kind of stuff?
Well, I'm touring right now. Usually, like when my this year's tour consists of first half, I play through the entire or almost the entire Alchemist is the album that I create, that came out at the end of last year, in some ways related to Paulo Coelho's bestseller, in some at least metaphysical ways. And for the second half, I sing in different languages, that's sort of the program that I tour with right now.
Cool. So, do you play any instruments besides the cello?
I play the guitar, and in fact, right now at the current tour, I do some guitar playing. That's about all I play publicly on stage. Other instruments like piano or recorder, I do not consider those playing professionally.
You don't play those for money?
I don't play those for money, exactly. I would not dare.
So, do you have anything interesting coming up? Like, are you going on tour again soon?
Or? Well, I just finished doing this tour. It was titled Cello, a portion of this tour, Cello for Peace. Portion of the proceeds was going to a humanitarian fund to help Ukraine, namely to build mobile medical units in areas where hospitals have been destroyed. So for me, it's a big cause, especially considering that I was born in Russia, my first language is Russian, and do I find myself? Where do I place myself in this whole situation with Ukraine? And obviously, I feel it's devastating, and I do feel a sense of responsibility, at least in part, on the part of the people that I consider my home. So, and I do everything I can to help the people of Ukraine by playing music, since we already established that music is a very powerful thing, and I do believe music can make a difference just on this, on the physical and neuroscientific level, and also tangibly by raising money and donating portion of the proceeds of the tour. So that just happened now. I'm taking a little break, and then in August going to restart that same tour, Cello for Peace. I'm going to do Canada. As of right now, it looks like there's going to be Vancouver, Edmonton, Calgary, then probably hopefully Ottawa, Toronto, and Montreal, and have a date in Chicago, September 10th, at the Epiphany Center for the Performing Arts. It's a new, beautiful venue. I don't know, have you been
there? I've played there, yeah, it's great.
It's quite remarkable in many, many ways, and done already a couple of shows there, and I'm going to do one more, so that's September 10th. And I'm going to do a few things again on the East Coast, and hopefully West Coast. That's September, October, and then, you know, whatever happens. Hoping to be able to bring my music to as many people around the world as possible. That's my biggest goal and kind of ambition in life, to deliver my music to as many people as I can.
I remember hearing you say one time that you wanted everyone on the planet to hear you play the cello.
Yeah, I want for everyone to do that. So even if I land, you know, a couple of billion short of that, that would still be a decent accomplishment for me.
That's amazing. Yeah, I think, you know, the cello, it's got such a deep sound. It's not like grating on the ears, you know, whereas some of the higher pitched instruments, it's almost like you inflict them on people sometimes, you know, you have to be in the right mood to want to hear those.
Right.
Cello, it's for everybody.
Yeah, a matter of taste, but cello is fairly universal. Yeah. And I do feel that the frequency that cello produces, frequencies, audible frequencies and beyond audible frequencies, because I do believe, and it's already, you know, it's almost a scientific fact, or it is a scientific fact, just not widely accepted scientific fact, that there are other frequencies beyond the audible spectrum that music creates, or any specific musical instruments. And I do know that cello has some of those frequencies beyond the audible spectrum that hit some right place for people to create coherence. That's what, for me, the sort of the biggest criteria in music is the creation of coherence, and that's something that the ancient folks knew back in, you know, ancient Egypt and places like that. They knew about that sort of coherence, and I think it's time for us to really become aware of it again. And I do, through playing, through composing, through playing for people, I know for fact, through their testimonies, I know for fact that this coherence really makes a difference in people in their physical, mental state, and it can heal. I cannot put it on my advertisement that music heals, you know, because I know chiropractors get sued for false advertisements, so there's nothing advertisement claims. I'm not claiming anything. I want for people to just come to it, and if they realize that there is some potential benefit, they're welcome to keep listening to my music.
All right. So, do you have any advice for young musicians, like how they can find their own voice the way you did?
Well,
just keep going.
Just keep going, and most importantly, with voice, you obviously you do it for yourself because you enjoy it. But there's no in any profession, you can be only fulfilled when you know that it makes a difference in lives of other people. Like, you can make $1 million, and if there's no like the return connection of doing some good to other people, the real realization that it does good to other people, that does not have value. And the same with any other form of achievement. Like, you could achieve something to a very high level, but if there's no connection with people, it ultimately will not create happiness in your life. So obviously for a musician, it would be an audience. And I do believe that just like there's the right calling and profession for every human being on earth, if they really go with their passion, same with the musician. There's audience, there's the right audience for every musician, for every type of music. So it's just a matter of finding that audience. And I guess for music, also it's important to say that if you're going into music with idea that it's an easy way to make money, it's not true. And if you go with the notion that you know, making money is the top priority, that also doesn't quite work. And I went through different stages. Obviously, you know, I was in situations in life where I really just needed to make both ends meet, and money was constantly, you know, on, you know, I couldn't help but think about money and what I had to make. And I did realize that it was really, you know, interfering with creativity and with the whole process of making music. And as soon as I was able to detach from that and just really do music for the sake of making music and sharing it with as many people as I could without any expectations of getting paid or, you know, making a living or making some kind of good living, that's when things started falling into place. So, and until today, I constantly have to like recheck with myself, like what is the reason why that I'm doing it for. It's sort of the more generous, it's kind of you know, it's consistent with other laws of nature, other laws of nature that don't teach you at school. So the more generous you are, the more sort of you get back in return and in many ways. And as a musician, the more generous you are as a musician, and that could mean many different things. The more you are, the more benefit you get in return, also of all different sorts, other than both monetary and non tangible.
For sure, you know. I mean, an easy example of that is the success of your students, or you know.
Right.
That makes you feel great, right?
Success of your students, testimonies of the people that come to see you play, other forms of, you know, making a difference with the music.
And the goodwill of musicians that you work with, right?
Absolutely.
That they enjoy working with you and making music
right.
with you.
Yeah.
And yeah, you're just spreading that. Cool. Anything you want to ask me?
What have you been up to?
You know, just playing a lot of Baroque music, doing some podcasting, cooking some steaks.
Cooking steaks. Oh, that's always fun. What's your favorite cut?
You know, lately I'm into, like, the flat iron.
Flat iron.
Yeah.
How about it?
It's pretty good. Just a little salt and pepper. It's great.
Oh, man.
On some charcoal grill. Yeah, that could happen this weekend.
That sounds pretty awesome.
All right, so it's been really interesting talking to you. We're going to take a little break and get our instruments out and play something. Thanks for listening. Please subscribe to the podcast. And if you're on Apple Podcasts, you can give us all the stars. I'll put a link for how you can hear Jan's music in the show notes. And or do you have a website you want me to
yeah,
say?
Of course, yeah, it's easy. My first name plus last name .com, MIANMAKSIN.com. So the key thing is not to misspell my last name. And usually I figured out the ratio. It's 2 out of 5 people misspell and mispronounce my last name. And that's not really helpful in the internet, you know.
But if you're looking at the show, this episode, you'll be able to see how to spell his name. Just do it carefully. And we'll be right back.
Thank you.